Now you can find, listen and subscribe to Chilling with Jens and the local Danfoss Climate Solution podcast in your RevTools app. Download it from danfoss.com, service and support, downloads. Hi, I'm Jens Andersen from Danfoss Climate Solution. Thank you for listening to this podcast where John Broughton and Jörg Saar will discuss energy efficiency and how to obtain this in cooling applications of all sorts.
Hi, John. Hi, Jörg. And welcome to, again, this podcast. Today's subject is energy efficiency on a, on a wide scale, so to speak. Which one of you two would like to sort of throw the ball?
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, energy efficiency is a wide topic. Not in itself to say why energy efficient. Well, to use low or to have a low energy bill, that's pretty clear, and use a low amount of energy to run your system. But then the question, what you need to do to have an energy efficient system, where to start, that's already a good question. Because it's not only that you just build a system and you use a compressor that is efficient. That's not the only thing. There is so much more to it.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Jens, I think in answer to that, I'd probably say it comes down to the correct selection of equipment for the job, the cooling job that you're trying to do. So if you're, let's say, on a freezer room with a room temperature of minus 18, you know, you want to be evaporating roughly sort of minus 25, minus 24, somewhere around there. And then you want to balance your equipment so that you have that correct evaporating temperature. Because if you're evaporating lower, you're going to basically use more energy. Many years ago, somebody said to me, it's about the lift. It's about the work that your machine is doing. So if you're lifting it from a very low temperature, let's say minus 28 to condensing at 40, you're making your compressor work very hard. But if you're you're evaporating, let's say minus 25 and condensing at 35, your machine is doing less work. It's doing less lift, if you like, from low to high. So that in essence is, you know, you're already being energy efficient by choosing the right equipment.
Agree. Yes. And then if you choose the right equipment, and sometimes that's forgotten because everybody thinks a lot about hardware. I mean, stuff you can grab, a compressor, a fan, a heat exchanger. One of the things you can kind of grab when it's in a bottle is the refrigerant. So you need to select the right refrigerant. And there are refrigerants which are made more for medium temperature or for air conditioning. And there are refrigerants which are made for low temperature applications. And you should not necessarily use only one refrigerant for everything. That will not be efficient everywhere. So there are really specific refrigerants for specific jobs.
And that right. comes down to the density, I guess, also Jörg, of the refrigerant.
Yes.
So, yeah, we won't mention any names, but the 400 series refrigerants are more dense than other refrigerants, let's say.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, if we talk about a larger chiller, for example, which makes cold water, yeah, but if it makes cold water, then it's already above the point of freezing. So that's for sure already, because water, when that goes below 0 Celsius, it's no longer water, it's called ice, and you don't pump that stuff. So that means we have a temperature above the point of freezing. And now that water supply temperatures for chillers, for buildings go up even to to make the building more efficient and so on, then you can use a refrigerant that is really good for these higher evaporating temperatures. If you have, as you mentioned, John, a cold room where you store ice cream, you want to keep that at minus 20, minus 22 Celsius at least. And then that air conditioning refrigerant is for sure not the right one. That's just how it is. And even if, I mean, if you've done that choice wrong, you cannot compensate for that. So if you're choosing the wrong refrigerant, you go for a freezer room, you choose a refrigerant that is made for air conditioning, you can do whatever you want. You can put in an efficient compressor. You can use fan speed controllers. You can put in large evaporators. Still, you cannot compensate for the choice of refrigerant. That was already the first killer of efficiency, and you cannot compensate for that.
Yeah. So if I should sort of condense, what a word, in this context, the two of you are saying is that we need, first of all, to be very aware of the task that the system is going to do. Is it low temperature, medium, or high temperature? And then you select your refrigerant from that task. And then on top of that, you decide which compressor and how that compressor is being run. Is it speed controls? Is it just an ordinary? Is it a condensing unit? What is it?
Mm. And also the type of compressor. So is it scroll? Is it piston? Is it screw? All of those choices would then come into play as well.
Agree. Yes, and you mentioned condensing units. Of course, you don't necessarily have a choice on which condenser a condensing unit manufacturer chooses. However, you can, of course, look at the data of these condensing units and check which one has a good COP, a good efficiency at a given operating point. Either you choose the condenser yourself, if you choose the not to use a condensing unit and you buy your compressor and the condenser yourself, or you choose a condensing unit that has a good selection already done by your condensing unit manufacturer. And then a lot of points come in: size of the condenser, what's the airflow, what type of condenser do you have, is it a fin and tube, is it a microchannel, and all of that, of course, means there is no black and white answer. It's always this, it's always that. You generally do that. There are some general things, like the bigger the condenser, the better it is, typically. But that's how it is. That's the same for the evaporator. The larger your evaporator, the lower your temperature difference between evaporating temperature and air temperature. That helps. Right, but that's the general point.
Yeah, the general rule. And just on that, if you increase your suction pressure by 1 Kelvin, you'll save roughly 2% energy. And the same with your condensing temperature. If you lower it by 1 Kelvin, you'll save roughly 2% energy. So as you said, Jörg, if you have a larger condenser, then you can lower your condensing temperature. And if you have a larger evaporator, you can increase your evaporating temperature.
Mm.
So the system becomes more energy efficient.
Yeah. And that's for the refrigeration system. If I just want to step out of the refrigeration system for a second, but then come back again, just to mention that if you build a cold room, of course, there are other factors going in. How thick is your insulation? How do you your insulation? What kind of light system do you install? LED or something else, right? Because you need to cool that down again in case the light is always on, maybe in a room. What type of fan do you have? If you have a standard fan, all the energy that goes into the fan of your evaporator fan, you need to cool that out of the room again. So if you have a more efficient fan, then your cooling demand is lower. All of that goes in. There are a lot of points where you can make things pretty good.
Yeah. And on that, just talking about the cold room, we as a, you know, industry can put in the most energy efficient equipment possible. Then it's down to the end user on how he uses that cold room. If he leaves the door open for 8 hours a day, you know, that would cause some issues. If he blocks the airflow to the back of the evaporator with, you know, boxes, we as the industry can do as much as we want to make things as energy efficient as possible. But if the end user disregards all our advice, you know, maybe he blocks the condenser in with boxes or whatever, then the head pressure rises, then we consume more energy. So it's everything. It's the selection, it's the installation, it's the operation. But the end user has a lot of responsibility to make sure he uses the system as it was designed as well.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Which also means that we as technicians needs to tell the user, well, at least to a certain degree, how he should actually operate his system, right?
Yeah.
Agree. What's interesting is that now there are opportunities to help the end user to operate the system better. I mean, some things are automated anyway, hopefully, like defrosting, that you have a system that's defrosting by itself in a good way. That's one thing. So we don't ask the end user anymore, well, look at your evaporator, and if there is ice on the evaporator, you push that button to defrost. That's for decades no longer happening, I hope. That's a system you should do yourself. However, now there are opportunities where you install a system with a few sensors. Let's only say a few temperature sensors and maybe a door sensor that gives an alarm, a door sensor. The door is open. When the door is open more than 2 minutes, it gives an alarm. Not only a light that goes up, but maybe sending an SMS to somebody saying, hey, your door is open, something like that, to really help to remember that. And the same might be for temperatures. If your temperature is too low in the room, your evaporating temperature gets too low, it just sends a signal, please let somebody check there. Of course, you can tell your end user, you have to do this and that and that. And that's annoying for your end user. But if you tell your end user, well, there is an opportunity where I can give you an information if something is not okay, so you can save energy. That system pays by itself.
Yeah.
I have a question regarding system flexibility. So, the flexibility, is that on the cost of extra energy? Flexibility in the sense that you can actually use the room, the system for, say, more than one purpose?
Oh, so you mean, just to understand you, so you mean you build a cold room and today you store fruits in that cold room at +6 Celsius and tomorrow you want to store frozen pizza at -22?
Well, maybe that's a bit that's a bit much, but yes, in a more limited way, yes, say with, I don't know, 5 degrees difference or 10 degrees maybe.
Maybe. Okay, good. Yeah. I just thinking of a typical example in a food factory. You might have, let's say, a blast chill, which then becomes a holding chiller, which is maybe more realistic, I guess, in terms of operation. So that that system, you would have to have the right equipment and the right amount of power or duty to do that blast chilling. But then when the system is down to temperature, you would then knock off a certain number of compressors or have speed control so that the system only uses a fraction of the energy to keep it at that holding temperature compared to what it started out at. But yeah, that would obviously cost you in material and function to do that role. But the main challenge, I guess, is to make the system as energy efficient in both of those situations. So one is when you're blast chilling your product, and then when you're holding it at, let's say, +2, for example, you would then make the system as energy efficient as possible at that temperature as well.
Agree. And if you have that challenge, before I start with that sentence, let me go back to my first question that I said, do you want to store something at 6 degrees Celsius and a day later at 22? Please don't. Right? If you can avoid that, I mean, that's a case which you should avoid. But if we now go back and say, well, there are different situations in this roughly the same temperature range, let's say medium temperature and low temperature, let's try to separate those two. But if we stay in the medium temperature range, and as John said, there is something where you have a cool down period, maybe blast chiller, and then a holding period. Now look at the application again. If you have something that cools down once and then keeps the temperature for a long time, let's say long storage of vegetables, then your pull down doesn't really matter. It's done in 2 days. You pull down within 2 days, or the large storage room, you pull that down in 2 days, and now you have a holding period of 180, 200 days. That means you focus on your holding period with the efficiency, because the 2 days is only 1% of the running time. So even if that is not very efficient, who cares? The 99% of the running time, they need to be efficient. But it really, quite often you have something like that, and then you focus on the period that has the biggest influence on your efficiency.
What else? I'm sort of thinking about the installation, the use of it, etc. And some of it comes back to basics. You know, make sure the condenser's clean, make sure we have good airflow across the condenser. That comes back to that saying, you know, if we have a 1K increase, we use 2% more energy on the condenser side. Airflow on your evaporators, we've spoken a little bit about that, making sure that the customer doesn't, block the airflow. Jörg's mentioned defrost. We need a nice clean coil, things like that. Pipe run is one. You know, if you have a 3 meter pipe run versus a 100 meter pipe run, the 100 meter pipe run is going to use more energy because you're pumping a lot more refrigerant around the system. If you have very high vertical risers, that's going to cause you a pressure drop, which uses more energy. The actual charge of refrigerant itself, you know, if you overcharge a system, you're going to use more energy pumping that around the system. So there's many things that will use energy. My always analogy is, if you walk up the stairs, that's much harder than walking down the stairs, because you're using energy. You're pushing against something, whereas coming down the stairs, that's easy. So I think it comes down to those. To think about what you're asking that refrigerant and the compressor to actually do.
Agree, totally agree. And you mentioned pipe run. John, you've probably also seen some stuff, and sometimes you think, come on, that that was lazy. When you have a suction line, for example, and you miss 2 meters of pipe, and you had a 1-inch pipe there all the time, and now you miss 2 meters to finalize that job, but you still have a 3/4 pipe available. No, you're not going to put these 2 meters, the final 2 meters, as a 3/4, because that gives a really big pressure drop. Get these 2 meters of 1-inch pipe somewhere and finalize the job with those. That's kind of stuff that I don't say that everybody is doing that. I'm sure not. I know not everybody's doing that, but I've seen it. And please don't do stuff like that. It's really important. Or, this angle here, I only have a smaller one available right now. Just come on, the final angle piece. Let's put the small one in. No, please don't. That gives you a big pressure drop, and that has an influence.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. And that reminds me of a situation, actually, talking about small, what I would say, small black compressors, so the small CC compressors, where it might be on a bottle cooler, for example, and it might be a remote condenser or a remote condenser unit. And there's, 60 meters of pipe on a very small black compressor. You're asking for trouble. You're making that compressor work incredibly hard to do the job that it's doing. Just think about what you're asking it to do: pipe size, pipe length, velocity, etc.
Yeah, that's true. That's a major impact there. Yeah, and then it's where you place a unit as well. We talked about that, not necessarily in this session, but before. Take a condensing unit, put it somewhere, and then pay attention that you don't recircle the air that's coming out of the condensing unit. Make sure that your airflow is okay, that you can get rid of the air, that the condensing unit does not take air back, warm air back into the condenser again. Or if you have several condensing units, please put them in parallel, kind of. One is sitting on the side of the other, so they all take fresh air. Don't put them one after the other, that the second one takes the air that comes out of the first one. And then the third one takes the air that comes out of the second, because you start with ambient air of 20. The first one increases that to 28. The second one increases that to 32. So the third one gets 32 air intake instead of 20. And as John said, 2-3% per Kelvin. So we have a 15 Kelvin higher condensing temperature. Come on. Just because of placing the units in the right way or the wrong way.
Oh, the wrong way. That's true. And that raises a question or a comment in my mind. Is another thing that I see a lot is don't oversize the equipment, and obviously don't undersize it. But we tend to live in a world where people think, I'll just add 10% as a safety. And then somebody else further down the supply chain thinks, oh, we'll just add another 10% to make sure that it's going to do the job. And then the equipment is not, running. It's stop, start. If it's a fixed speed machine, every time that starts, that's pulling eight times full load current to physically get the machine away, to get the compressor to spin. That's crazy. But you see that more and more these days. Very rare to see undersized equipment. It's generally oversized. So there again, you're just wasting energy constantly, which is crazy.
That's true. Yeah. And of course, that accounts for the capacity of the complete equipment. Oversizing a pipe is usually a single pipe is usually not that much of a deal. But oversizing the equipment, as John said, then you run into a start-stop operation. And that's simply not efficient because you never reach, one is the starting current, the other one is you never really reach a stable operating point. It cuts out before you reach an operating point. So it's constantly in the kind of pull down phase. It's not efficient what you do there.
Yeah. And it's not good for the compressor for sure.
Yeah. Certainly not. It's not good for the compressor. That's the next one. And if you go to really bad things now, and I've seen that only once or twice, so I hope I'm pretty sure that's not a usual thing. But just to talk about that, I saw undersized electrical equipment where it was a bit of a challenge to touch a wire, to touch a connecting box, because that was so hot that thing was drawing, let's say, 20 amps, and the wire was designed for 6-7 kind of, so it was not glowing, but it was really warm, and that's all energy that goes to waste. You heat the wire, the heat disappears, and that's it. And of course, sooner or later, that wire might generate a far bigger problem than just wasting heat.
Mm-hmm. At least it won't get snow on it in the winter, Jörg.
It won't get snow in it in the winter. Yeah, that's true. And talking about winter, maybe that's a good one. In the winter, you need to make sure that your condensing pressure is still high enough. You can do that with a condensing pressure regulator, which is good. That's fine. That's all okay. Just think about where you want to set that, so that maybe in the summertime you have that as open as possible, and don't set it to 50 Celsius or to even 40 that it works all the time and throttles the flow all the time out of the condenser. Set it to the really lowest you need.
No, that's very true. Just coming back to a point you made, Jörg, about one condenser blowing into another. I had a site a couple of years ago where we had a condenser unit and it didn't have a fan speed control fitted to regulate the head pressure in the wintertime. And the poor condenser unit, this was on a refrigeration system, and the poor condenser unit was actually surrounded by air conditioning condensers, which were on heating. So the condenser itself was blowing out cold air.
Mm.
So it was making the problem even worse because this poor refrigeration unit was freezing with all this cold air being blown out from all the air conditioning condenser units that were around it. So that was a first. I've never seen that since, but so think about the placement of where you put your condenser unit, and if it's going to operate in low ambient, make sure you have some form of head pressure control fitted. Again, you know, from an energy efficiency point of view, the system is running and running and running, but it's not maintaining the required temperature because it's not getting the pressure drop across the expansion valve to get the refrigeration effect. So, you know, again, you're just wasting energy there.
Yeah. We have been talking now for about half an hour, something like that. So I think we should say thank you for today, and thank you so much for attending, both John and Jörg. I'm sure we'll be talking again quite soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jens.
Thank you for listening in on this podcast. You are very welcome to post your questions in the social medias where you find Danfoss, typically LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. Thank you so much, and remember to keep your cool, even when things get hot.